Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Is gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy.
Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Happy Thursday. Glad to be here. Glad to be along with you, and happy to have you as well. I hope you're getting to enjoy this absolutely incredible Chamber of Commerce Day. We haven't had a lot of those lately, but this is definitely going to be one. It is gorgeous outside. It's one of those spring days that we've kind of been cheated out of, it seems. This spring, it's been a very muted spring. We haven't had a lot of these days, or maybe it's just my thinking, but doesn't seem like it, at least. But looking forward to another fun day. Matt Taylor will join us, of course. Dustin Schutte, Coach Griff, along, man. We'll hear from the coaches from last night. We were down in Huber's. We have returned. I have returned. And I hope the driving's done for a while. Mercy, it's been a lot. But that will be the last time I think we speak with the coaches for a while. And I'm sure they're happy about that. Man, Huber's was packed to the gills. I'm sure you've seen plenty of photos from it and whatnot, but we'll hear from the coaches as we were able to speak to them prior to the shindig and the shenanigans that went on. But no, just kidding. But just another big night. There players down there. I didn't even see who all was there because it was so busy. Man, it was incredible. Chris, appreciate you so much, man. Yeah, that was brought up. We'll hear from Coach Sig on Big Noon Kickoff coming for the big first game. But again, those are the spoils that Indiana is going to start getting before they were one of the last teams that were looked at to be on TV like that. But now, that's not the case. It doesn't even matter who they're playing, as you can see. So good things will come when you win. I mean, I've said it a billion times. Winning cures everything. And it certainly does. And it certainly does as far as bringing in recruiting, bringing in more TV. So there you go. But appreciate you, Chris. Good to see you on as well, and everybody else. Fred said Don did a great job at Huber's. Good to see an old man with the microphone. Well, he's the pro's pro, man. I mean, this is old hat for him. He is he's right at it. I promise you, he is grateful that he didn't have to sit in that line to sign autographs afterwards, because it was, when I say out the door, it's, I don't know how many people that were there of the approximate 1,100 people that were there waited in line for autographs, but a large segment, and you can imagine how much longer that took. And I think there were a few that didn't get that, but hopefully they'll get that set up and straightened up. But we'll hear from both coaches later on, and Coach Griff will join us in the next segment as well, or I can just make him join us now. Coach, how are you doing today, sir?
Good day. Good day. How are you?
If I was any better, I'd be you.
you've kind of been all over the map this last couple days in Indy, down to the big event last night and back. You're probably ready for a little vacation.
You ain't lying, my friend. I don't even know how many miles that I've had to travel, but it's over 2,000, I'm pretty sure. But, well, I know for a fact. But, yeah, you're not lying. But the, what do they say? The show must go on, right?
Absolutely.
There you go, unfortunately.
No excuses.
That's no excuses. Right. I'll tell you what. I was talking last night to Charlie Duffy, the media relations rep for Indiana basketball. Great, great guy. Just superb, and he's awesome helping us with Indiana basketball and Coach DeVries. But we were talking about there's just so much now that June, the month of June, might be the only day that there's not something going on, because we're at the exact end of May right now. And then July, we've got football media days. Mm-hmm. And so, boom, and it starts. And yeah, after football media days, there's fall camp. So it's a very small window now, man, when you're covering all this. And I'm not going to lie, I am a little tired. I'd love one of those things people call a vacation. I've heard of those, but I'll have to get me some of that. Definitely will.
Yeah, Coach, I'll come out of the bullpen for you.
What's that?
I'll come out of the bullpen for you.
It may exactly be needed at some point, and that's no joke. Appreciate Coach being with us now. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about whatever else is going on with recruiting, and we'll hear from Coach Sieg as well. Back with plenty more Indiana Sports Beat. Well, I guess we shouldn't take a break just yet. Someone says 100 days. Until IU kickoff, Brian's got it up there. We hit the magic mark. 100 days.
It's crazy.
And
you blinked and May was over.
What's that?
You blink and May is over.
Oh, you blink and the summer's over, man.
Well, we had a great May. I mean, May's always great because you got the Kentucky Derby that kicks off the month of May for us Derby fans. And then you got the 500 that kind of ties up the end of the month, but
well, leading up to the entire month.
Yeah, yeah, you'll lead up to it because of all the different things that are going on at the track and things. So May is a very exciting month for the Hoosier State, I guess you could say.
Exciting and tiring if you're covering those
events. Yeah, absolutely.
Honored to be able to do it. Not going to say otherwise, but it's a lot to do if you do it right. And I think I said this earlier, I had not previously covered Indy like covering it. I mean, mm-hmm. giving it the coverage it deserved every day. Well, I did this year, and you can tell a difference, let me tell you. But I look forward to it. The funny thing is, I missed Indy as soon as it was over. It was like Christmas yet again, because that's what it's like. But the great thing is, got more races throughout the IndyCar season. They've got one coming up. We'll be talking about later today or tomorrow, the Detroit Grand Prix this weekend. Next weekend, they're in St. Louis. So
I remember the days they used to go right to Milwaukee after the 500. Yeah, they go up and run Milwaukee after the 500, and that was kind of the follow-up race to the 500. But now they've kind of switched that around a little bit. But it's the greatest thing about the 500 again this year was the race itself. Took a little while to get completed, but the racing was phenomenal.
One of the best ever. I mean, I know we can't with 110 of them. It's kind of hard to compare because let's be honest, most of us have no clue about the first 60.
Yeah.
I mean, plus there's no comparison, because what those guys did is also remarkable, mm-hmm. because they had no safety equipment. They had, it was like literally, well, today you're taking your life in your hands still, mm-hmm. for different reasons, but they were doing the same thing then. They weren't moving as fast, but they also didn't have any safety equipment. I mean, these were open cockpit vehicles with nothing around them. Crazy. And they were driving on bricks.
Yeah.
Bricks for 500 miles. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, that'd have been, it'd probably rattle your bones a little bit.
I was going to say, boy, that'd knock your dentures out.
No question. Again, I can only imagine that feeling going around a track at whatever miles an hour they were going. That had to be a little bit of a jolt to the body.
Yeah, I just don't care how much you try. 2.5 miles of a track made of brick, there's no way that that's going to be smooth.
Can you imagine trying to upkeep brick? Because, you know, you always get those ones that pop up a little higher than the rest of the bricks, and making sure that they're all compacted. Because I can imagine a brick that's up maybe 1/4 inch above everything else, and that a tire would hit it. It could be detrimental, you know, to the tire and as you said, the driver. But there's no question in today's racing, the advancements that they've made to the race cars for safety purposes. To protect the drivers, because the speeds that they're going is just mind-boggling. They've come a long way with that to ensure, at least to a degree, the safety of the drivers. And like you said, that nothing is 100%, you know, proof on a car that's going 200 miles an hour and hitting a wall. But yeah, phenomenal racing. It was just a day that saw, I think they said somewhere in the upper hood, 55 lead changes or something like that on the day. Oh,
no. It was, I think it ended up being 70.
Okay. I couldn't remember the last count. When
it either tied the record or exceeded the record. So that, again, adds to
the intrigue.
Yeah, it's like, wow. Hell, how many lead changes were there on the last lap? There were, let's see, Malukas took the lead from Pato Ward. I don't remember.
That was the one that took over. And then, of course, the guy taking over there in the stretch. Yeah. I felt sorry for the young kid, because he did race a heck of a race. You know, he couldn't do anything else, because, you know, what other choice he had to do was wreck them both. You know, that's the only thing he could have done. And it would have been bad news anyway.
I've talked about this, but how Felix Rosenquist had to hold that car. I keep watching that video over and over in the last lap. Boy, there was a moment where if his left front and Pato Ward's right rear didn't touch, it wasn't because they weren't close enough. Let me tell you, couldn't have slid a piece of paper between them.
Right into turn one. Yeah, right into turn one there. That was a crazy move. And you thought with those two guys racing side by side, that was going to help the young pup get home. But my goodness, did they close it there in that turn, right into turn three and four. It was just, again, a phenomenal race. You know, the day that a lot of drivers had were, you know, up and down days for everybody, because you know, there's a lot goes into it. Like you said, it's a whole month of May mentality of trying to get the cars right. And, you know, you got guys that are first timers, and you got guys that have been, you know, raced it forever. And there's just nothing like it. And the fact that Sig was in the pace car, you know, kind of, you could see from his reaction to the day how respective he was of the race car industry, and watching it from, you know, that point of view.
He what? Boy, that going into the turns at speed, he wanted no part of that.
Don't lift.
It was funny, but it's easy. Like I said, it's easy for me to sit here and say, "Oh man, I would have just because the car's made for it." But I also understand, man, this was not Talladega or Charlotte with a big old banked turn. 9 degrees isn't jack. That's right. Getting off of an interstate ramp, literally. I mean, I think getting off, when you get off, it's probably twice that. Well, it depends on the road, but most of them are that. But fun. It was all good and fun. We'll hear from both coaches, though, later on from last night at Huber's. And I think, yeah, he was asked about that again. He said he enjoyed it, of course. Too bad they don't give you the pace car when you get to drive it, because that'd be a hell of a gift. They do give it to the winner of the Indianapolis 500. So that's another $230,000 on top of the $4.3 million that he won. So, but what do you do with a car like that, man? I mean, it's first of all, you're that famous. And how you got, if you ever drove it, everybody would be looking at it to begin with. And then if Felix Rosenquist is in it, you're like, wow. So that's just a keeper showpiece.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, those things are so, you know, built for just that track in a lot of ways that I'm not sure how much they get out of them after the race. It's remarkable the amount of engineering that goes into those cars and the data that they use from it to put things together to try to get the best speed out of them. I mean, they gear it for the qualifying, but you know, they're not running the qualifier car, you know, in theory, on race day, because the qualifying is built for just to see how fast you can get that thing going. And then they have their setup for the race, but it's just amazing what goes into it now compared to, like you said, way, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, where they were just jumping in the cars and just, it was what it was.
We've got much more coming up. Coach Griffiths with us. I like to call him Shooty Dustin. We'll join us, Dustin Shooty. Join us later, Matt Taylor as well. Back with more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Glad to be here with you, as always. Glad to have Coach Griff in the house as well. And recruiting going pretty, pretty, pretty good for Indiana football right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're swinging for the fences on some of them. I know there was some frustrations early on this summer recruiting time period that they kind of weren't landing the, you know, 4 and 5 stars that they had been recruiting, but they're not going to get all of them. And they're still going to have to break some barriers, even though they're the defending Big Ten champions and national champions. You still are not in that blue blood arena that can go up against Michigan and Ohio State on a continual basis and, you know, get, you know, 5 of the top 6 guys, you know, but they're making their way through that. So there's no question that they're making headway. Got some big ones coming up here shortly. The month of June is going to be another big month with all the 1-day camps that they will have. And that will be important as well, because you'll have guys that are coming in that have offers, and you'll have guys coming in hoping to leave with an offer. You know, that was when my son was being recruited by Indiana and Illinois and all of them. Those 1-day camps were important because that's what usually led to being given an offer, especially those guys that maybe are, you know, they need to see them in person and get a good feel for them. And that's what, you know, my son Isaac was up against when he got offered there on their 1-day camp under Kevin Wilson. So a lot of time left, and I do like where Indiana's at with a lot of kids. And you know, I'd like to see them got the tight end kid out of Ohio that ended up going to Kansas. I think it was Oglesby. Is that his name? I can't think of it.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I was a little surprised on that one. He picked Kansas. But as Sig said, the value that our fresh this recruiting class is garnering is mind-boggling. Good, there's a good website called the NIL Standard that has a listing of the Indiana roster for 2026. Right now is estimated to be at 32.43 million overall. And it gives all the different values that we always wonder what is so-and-so being.
When we say value, what does that mean? Because this is not what these guys are being paid. And I think people get confused with that because On3 has their NIL evaluations as well. And it's not valuation is what you're worth, I think, is the best way to say it.
I think what they did with this one is trying to get it into the best estimates as they can get based upon the data that's available. Now, is it an absolute? Probably not. Is it in the arena of guesstimation? More than likely. But what I like about it, it does give everybody that's on the rosters estimated, well, I call it estimated value. They call it roster value that's out there. And it goes, it's every player, not just the starting 11. You know, you got everybody from A to Z on there, and it gives other schools as well. So again, it gives us a barometer, not that it's absolute, but what I think Sig referred to last night down there at Huber's event about, it's, you know, how much longer can this go on where the values are getting to where they're at, especially for incoming freshmen? He was talking about that as well. Now, he didn't go much into it. You know, he's pretty standard. He kind of stays out of the debates that are happening on the outside of football. But he did say at some point it's got to be wrangled in because these schools will not be able to handle much more this stuff going out of sight in terms of dollars.
Well, he said that very thing last night. So we'll hear from that in a little while, as soon as I can get that downloaded. But
great video, by the way. I tell you, it was clear and crisp. I could hear it, and it was awesome. So congratulations on getting great video.
Well, that's
because it's hard.
Let me tell you, it is hard. And the thing that drives me insane is not having good audio with videos or good audio, period. Drives me nuts. And so if I ever have audio and it's not good, trust me, it is just, I'm eating my fingers off. But I use mics for everything.
It came clear, I thought.
No one else usually does, and I think it's very important. But it would... it helps when you actually have it ready to go, but we'll get to that here in a little bit. But yeah, he talks a lot about staying in his lane, and it makes sense because the conference is going to do what they're going to do, and that's how it's going to be. And so, and they would prefer that their coaches are in lockstep with them. And that is the case. Mm-hmm. The Big Ten coaches are behind the 24 of Tony Petitti, but that's Fox-driven. Don't confuse it with anything. It's about Fox getting some of these games. And I don't have a problem with that because, as a matter of fact, I've said it many times, I can't stand the fact that ESPN has them all because all they are is a mouthpiece for the SEC mainly. And if opportunity arises, the ACC, or I think they have Big 12 as games as well, but they're a mouthpiece for the SEC. That's what they are. And they do their damnedest to prop them up. And that is still helping to continue this facade that the SEC is what the SEC used to be. And it's not, because, I mean, the Big Ten is not what the SEC used to be. But the Big Ten has just had the best teams. They haven't had maybe the deepest, but they've had the best, at least for three straight years they have. And it's come at a time where college football has changed, Coach, that has taken away the locks and the keys that the SEC had.
Yeah, no question. There's been a little bit better of, I guess you call it a more level playing field in the last few years that has enabled teams such as Indiana to become more competitive. It still comes down to recruiting and development because Indiana was doing it with more three stars than they were anything else. And in that respect, you know, Stanky came out yesterday and, you know, now it's about the SEC being better from top to bottom than any conference out there. You know, that's the talk now. We're better and deeper than the Big Ten. And, you know, that wasn't used to be the talk to a certain degree from the SEC, but now they're going to have to figure out ways to explain why they're not winning national championships and the Big Ten is. And his reference was, we beat everybody up in our schedule, that by the time we get to the national championship game, we're not as fresh as maybe the team from the Big Ten who has an easier, you know, easier way through the schedule. And I, you know, again, this is all mouthpiece stuff, and this is all the banter that goes on in the real world of, you know, sports media and stuff. But, you know, that's why SIG doesn't get involved with it. And I think it's the best thing. I'm not, I haven't heard many coaches, even from the SEC to a degree, unless you're Lane Kiffin, who opens his mouth quite a bit and puts his foot in it. But for the most part, coaches are pretty much, you know, staying in their lane, focusing on their team, being in lockstep with the AD and the president on their direction. And if that, you know, and that alignment usually aligns with what the Big Ten Conference is trying to accomplish, the 24-team playoff idea. And again, I think SIG just doesn't like to get into throwing out his opinion on everything and anything because, as he said, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter his opinion in that regard because there's going to be people that have a better hold of it that are going to make the decision, and we're going to follow it and move forward.
Absolutely. And he was asked, he did talk about player caps and things like that, and he tried to stay away from it, but he also acknowledged that things are going to have to change because it's not sustainable. And we all understand and agree to that. And this is not directed towards SIG or anybody else, but when the coaches that are making $10, $11, $12, $13 million a year themselves are saying this, there's going to be some pushback. I mean, there's just going to be a natural pushback.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of has to go hand in hand, you know, if, and again, you know, a 100-man roster of trying to manage the dollars and cents of it versus the coaches is a little different, but you're correct in the sense that the outward projection is if you're making 13, 14, 15 million a year, because they say that's the market rate. Well, the same thing is true for the athletes that are competing and being recruited at the, you know, the Power Four level. You know, there's going to be a value to get a kid that's a four-star or a five-star type of kid. And if you can't pay for it, you can't pay for it. I mean, that's the bottom line. So you have to be careful. And I think SIG's pretty good at this, of not thinking that you're just going to throw tens of millions of dollars at these young kids coming in because they're not proven at the P4 level, irregardless of what a ranking says about them. So that's where you got to be smart. And that's where SIG has done very well. With the roster management and the whole team that he's got in place in the recruiting department to go through these kids and try and to establish value and things of that nature. And I do think we'll get there, but we've said this before. It's going to get ugly here for the next couple of years until we get it all figured out. It's just the way it is and the way it came about because this was all dropped onto the scene with really not much thought going into it on what is the value, you know, the appropriate way to do this. And it was just kind of says, here you go, boys, have at it. And that's what they did. And sometimes that's harder to wrangle in than trying to let it go out in an easier implementation than what they did with the new rules in terms of value and paying kids.
Yeah, let's hear. This is one of the questions Coach was asked last night, Mike Nyslak, on this particular question here.
But in terms of, like, I mean, obviously the legislation they're talking about, changing rules and things, is there anything, like, I mean, you had the spring meetings recently, when you're in those rooms, like, is there anything you're advocating for, things that you want to see changes, anything, like, I mean, like I said, I know you like to stay in your lane, but
truthfully, it's outside my control. We all have our opinions. What's the point? I just hope we get things fixed.
Are you in favor of a salary cap, though, having operated kind of in this last 2 years with sort of the commission and things like that?
You know, again, I know what our people support, and I support what our people support. For me to comment on this or that, but, you know, I got no control over this process.
What do you think of Fox Big Noon kickoffs coming to your season?
That'd be good, yeah. Important.
Now, he said that there, but now I've got to find it again where he did talk about that there has to be a salary cap because it's not sustainable, because we've seen it's the year-over-year jump. If this were a company, my God, the owners, the stockholders would be doing somersaults from here to South Bend to Evansville to where to the region, back to Indy to Bloomington, because if this was the stock market, it has just doubled year over year over. How long ago were we talking about Nigel Pack? I mean, he's always going to be that first pin in the board. 2 year, $800,000 deal. Wow. That blew our minds. It blew our, this dude's going to make 400 grand. Holy smokes. Which is give me 400 grand, yeah, man. And
absolutely.
You'll see me for a hot minute. I damn promise you. But that is lunch money compared to where we already are. Basketball players, $4 million a year in that short time. I mean, I don't remember what year it was that Nigel Pack did that, but when did this start? 2021?
22? Somewhere around, yeah, 22, I think.
We're not talking a decade. We're talking just a few years that it just doubled. And so if that were to continue next year, my God, everybody's going to be priced out, except for certain ones that have the people that are just consumed with getting what they want at all cost. And there's just not a lot of those around. And then you really have to wonder, why are we spending this kind of money? Players deserve to be paid. I'm not ever arguing that.
Right.
But I'm also we've gotten to a point to where, what the hell, man? This is not worth that, is it?
Yeah. Well, you think too that with some of this, you'd have a better standard of using some money for infrastructure and things of that nature, rather than throwing it all back into the same pool and trying to, you know, go out and spend every penny of it in that respect. But yeah, again, the thing that's going to hurt is going to be the sports that have lasted this long, even though some schools have already cut some of these sports around the country. And that is going to continue to happen, especially at schools that have to do that in order to be able to compete at a high level, because at some point the strain on the overall budget becomes unbearable, as as kind of what Sig was alluding to, being able to spread it across. You know, football's the unique beast in all this because you've got 100 kids as opposed to a basketball roster of 14 or 15 in that regard. You know, I think the estimated value of Indiana's offensive top 11 is $10.2 million, and defense is $8.58 million. So that gives you an idea, man. That's a lot of dough that you're spending on 11 guys on both sides of the ball. That's over, what's that, almost $18.6 million on 22 guys.
And, you know, the jealousy part has not, to my knowledge, really reared its head. But you wonder if that starts to happen. But we'll see.
No, yeah, the Title IX question is going to come into this equation at some point, even though it hasn't raised up.
I don't see that having any bearing. There's no.
Well, it's going to be challenged, is my point. It, like you said, the overall squeezing of the value, and not the jealousy, but, you know, why are they getting this and we're getting that, you know, type.
Well, that's easy. Because they make the damn money.
Well, we know that.
I mean, there's two sports.
Yeah. There,
we know this. Football and men's basketball that generate income. That generate profit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between generating revenue and generating profit.
Yeah, correct.
Revenue, yeah, that's money. But that does not, women's basketball in 99% of the cases, unless you're maybe Iowa, UConn, something like that, operate at a huge loss in the millions of dollars. And that includes Indiana women's basketball. It's football and men's basketball. And that's how it's going to be, that generates the revenue. So therefore, that is where it's going. You have to feed the machine that is feeding you.
Yeah, no question. Women's
basketball survives because of men's basketball and football. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. But many other sports, all the other sports, survive because of that as well. So it's not unique in that situation.
No, and those two sports have normally provided the budget for the other sports within your program. And I'll give you an example. When I was at Ball State, we would play two Power Four teams a year. One year we played Florida and Kansas back to back, and Kansas was the number one ranked team in the country. And we got over, I think, a total of like $2.5 million for both of those games. We didn't see a dime of that come into the football budget. That was used to cover the budgets of all the other sports within the department, especially on the women's side. And that's how these, like you said, this is how athletic departments survive. They take, like you said, the top two sports are going to help and feed the other sports that within the program to keep them viable in those sports. Now, this is starting to get taken away from because, like we said, is that the more money it takes to feed the beast, the less money they have to send into the department sport wide, and that's why you see cuts being made in sports, especially in some athletic departments, and that's going to continue to happen because of the values that are generating in the two top sports, which is men's basketball and football. Now, I will say women's basketball has come a long way, and they're getting in terms of getting some quality movie deals. No, I know.
People take it that way.
No, and that's what they've got a more chance of surviving a little bit more so than other sports within the department, unless you know, how you look at it, because of what they've generated for some TV deals and things like that. And as fact, you know, let's face fact, Caitlin Clark has risen the profile of women's basketball ever since she was at Iowa. So, but it's a dynamic that every athletic department goes through. I would imagine Dolson at Indiana pulls a lot of hair out when it comes to this question and, you know, the survivability of the department and how that's going to happen. And sometimes you got to make the tough decisions. And Scott did last year. They cut off some of the administrative staff to make room for this exact thing that now that we're paying college athletes.
No doubt. We've got to take a quick break. Coach Griff with us. I forgot. Shooty Dustin, gutless, for not joining us this week, getting married.
I think tomorrow, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's maybe, I don't remember if it's tomorrow or Saturday. I'm just
well, congrats, Shooty. But
hey, we've got more coming up. Appreciate you being with us, Jim Coyle and Coach Griff, back with more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. On this Thursday, we're toward the end of the week for this short week. And always love a short week. It's not feeling like a short week all of a sudden.
Yeah, it kind of creeps up on you. And then next thing you know, you've lost track of time.
Yeah, I need another one. I need a day.
Extra day.
But Coach Sig, I asked him last night about recruiting. It's been pretty off the charts. They have had just so many monster weekends, Coach, of visits that have been important of getting guys in. I mean, they're getting guys in they never would have gotten in before for visits. As we know, we're guys that are wanting to come here now. Josh Hoover, I had this conversation last night. I think that Josh Hoover is making less money at Indiana than he would have made at TCU. A, because I know they've got more money because they're in Texas and every damn school in Texas has money coming out of their ears. But he came here to get better. He came here to not to be Fernando Mendoza, but to get what Fernando Mendoza got from Kurt Cignetti, from this offense, from Mike Shanahan. It's just, he wants to go to the NFL. And I think he looked at his situation at TCU and said, this is as good as it's going to get. Mm-hmm. And he had the opportunity and he took it. But this is not about Josh, but I asked Coach last night about these big-time recruiting weekends that they've had. Let's hear what he had to say.
A lot of success, it seems to be just generating.
But yeah, we've had, and we got another one coming up, and, you know, it's the market is pretty expensive. It's scary. So I guess in relative to your question, I think players should get paid, but something that's going to have to be done in the next 12 to 24 months, or universities aren't going to be able to handle this. College football won't exist the way we're going right now.
When you were at the Big Ten meeting, was that the main focus of a lot of the conversations out there when you're in the closed room?
It's one of the things that we talk about. But there's a number of other issues, too. I think at the presidential level, there's a little more focus on that.
That's why I couldn't find that answer. I forgot. I asked him about the recruiting. He segued right in. Mike Nieselak from the Bloomington Herald or the Star, which is the same, but obviously, he's going to be writing something on that because he was asking questions along those lines. But he kept asking, and he just kept getting the company line stuff. I ask a question about recruiting, and he answers Mike's question, in essence. So kind of funny how that goes. But there you go, talking about how it's not sustainable, which, of course, we all kind of know that.
Well, and I think he's pointing to the fact that these 4- and 5-star recruits that everybody you know, wants, because one, they're talented kids, are getting dollars thrown at them that can't be sustainable if you're trying to add, you know, four or five of them to your roster every year. It's too expensive. You can't get all of them because of the number that they're throwing out to, basically, I call it an unproven player. I mean, they're proven. They got athletic ability and they dominated at the high school level, but this isn't the high school level. And these kids.
Conversation yesterday, Coach, talking about rankings, basically, how these guys, the ranking that's put on a player, you just don't know. And that's more probably in basketball, I think, than football. But yeah, your coaches, and I would use the hell out of the transfer portal. I don't care. I mean, you want to have the best roster you can have, but you can also only have the best roster you can afford.
Correct. And again, Sig's about productivity. And the high school tape of productivity is one thing, but the collegiate productivity is a completely different animal of evaluation. You know, yeah, they, you know, Indiana picked up Mason McDermott, the kid from Noblesville. He's a 4-star, really good offensive lineman. He's got a lot of potential, 6'7", 290. He's not going to be in the top five come August 1st. You know, that's the, he's just not going to be that way because he's not ready for this level of, you know, opportunity. Now, that doesn't mean he won't be a backup in that respect, but at the same time, that's why the portal has been a very important facet for Indiana. You look at what they picked up on the defensive line, the two kids from Kansas State who are dynamite players. And I think Sid made reference to this last night. They're three deep of really good players on the defensive line. And it was very hard to go against them in the spring because Indiana only had 10 guys healthy on the offensive line, and they were young pups, not the standard operating top five guys. So you can see how important that is to Indiana, with the portal being a very big tool that they've utilized and utilized well. And that's not to say they're not trying to build it from the ground up. They're eventually going to get there. You're going to start seeing more and more kids that they've recruited start putting themselves in a position to play and in the lineup and so forth and so on. But I just don't, it's going to be very hard to get a dominant 4- and 5-star type of roster in terms of today's dollars for a school like Indiana. Now, Texas, Alabama, Ohio State, maybe, you know, we've seen them do it because they've done it over the last few years. But I don't think they can continue to do it either, because you got to have money to go around because you have 105 players on your roster.
Got to have money to make money. Mm-hmm. The old adage, and it continues to be true in sports. I mean, now we're sitting here saying this and we're coming up upon a break, but Sig did it. Not only did he do it, he did it in unbelievably record-breaking fashion, kicking the living crap out of everybody along the way with a team that averaged being 3 stars. And that's because they had 0 5-stars, 7 4-stars, multiple 0-stars.
Correct.
And so that's going to be, I don't want to say that's the expectation, but you've got all these schools that are going, dude, Sig just kicked your ass with the JMU guys and the Mac school guys and some talent thrown in. But there's truth to that. And they look at their $30, $40 million rosters going, what the hell? But hey, Coach Griff is with us. We got to take a pause for the cause. Dustin Schutte not on with us today. I forgot he's getting married. Something out of the way. I can't believe he didn't take time to. I'm just kidding. We've got lots more coming up here. Keep it locked 98.7 WWZ in the Zone, Bloomington's sports station. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Beautiful outside, at least here in central Indiana, as they call it. 70, what, getting up to 84 today for a high later on this afternoon. But apparently it's gonna be warm up there in Fort Wayne.
Yeah, it's what I would call a beautiful lake day here in the great state of Indiana, especially up here in the northeast corner. And boats in the water, ready to roll up here.
What? And, I didn't know you had a boat.
Oh, yeah. I live on a lake up here. And up north of Columbia City on a lake called Big Cedar Lake. It's called the part of the Tri-Lakes up here. And I call it the poor man's lake because we're not dropping $1 million to live on a lake that you would at Lake James or Wawasee. But yeah, my wife and I did this about 10 years ago. Decided to take a plunge and be on vacation every day.
No pun like intended. No
pun intended is that we haven't gone on many vacations because she's a business owner herself and she hates to take time away from it. And so this way we get being on vacation every day. That feeling, I guess you could say.
You said the word, what's vacation? What does that mean?
That? Same thing that you have a trouble saying yourself. Time off, taking time off. That's my wife right now. So
yeah, we didn't have a show Monday and for Memorial Day. And if that hadn't have been the case, I don't know what I would be able to talk right now.
Yeah.
In all seriousness. But so now for Indiana fans, it kind of goes dark. We've been able to speak to both coaches within a roughly two-week period, which was surprising because I didn't expect the other event that was going on up in Carmel, but they made them available for more probably NDTV, but and then the event down in south there at Huber's last night in Starlight. And again, if you haven't been to Huber's, you're missing out, and you don't have to live down there. I mean, if you're coming from Chicago and you're going to Nashville, it's an easy stop off. And if you've got kids, oh man, they will love it. But the amount of things that they have, you know, they make their own wines, of course, and they have for generations. They grow their own grapes, but they've been into bourbon now. I met one of the master distillers last night. I was with a group of great friends. That's the thing I love about Huber's. That's Southern Indiana. That's where I'm from. And I normally get to see a ton of people I know. Last night was so packed, so busy. They got the main portion of it over much quicker than I've ever seen, because I was still in the back trying to do some stuff, and I heard somebody say, yeah, it's over, they're about ready to start doing the autograph thing. I'm like, what? We gratefully get to eat that fried chicken dinner that they make, but I was like, I had a full plate still, and I'm trying to work, and I'm like, oh my God. But that was because they had 1 billion people that was lining up for autographs. And that's why. And I understood at that time, but I was able to get out and see some friends, but Critter and Jennifer Thompson, big IU supporters from down home, Andrew Liebert. I graduated with his brother, who I'm going to get on the show here soon, Carl Liebert. Carl, And Andrew texted him last night and said, hey, Jim's going to reach out to you. He said, you've told me that 1,000 times. So I'm writing it down right now. I'm going to text him as soon as the show's over. He played at Navy with David Robinson.
Okay.
It was, you know, we had a, I remember having, we had some pretty good high school teams back then at Floyd Central. And Carl was on our 83 team, and then he went off to Navy, and you didn't think much of it. But no one knew at the time that they had a dude named Mr. Robinson that was going to grow 6 inches.
Oh, my.
He grew 6 inches, I think, while he was at Navy, if I recall correctly. But you know the rest of the story. Yeah, Big David, I remember they played UK, and I'm like watching the game. Here's Carl. I'm like, damn. But more importantly, Carl is deeply involved with and is on the board of the V Foundation. And so that's a huge, huge deal. Look forward to getting Carl on. So Tim
Witt, awesome.
And his wife, Rachel Ream, telling me stories that I had forgotten all about because my brain is just mush, I guess. But she had gotten, she was a manager for our football team and had gotten ran over and hurt. And apparently I scooped her up and was Mr. America, and me and someone else carried her to the training room, and she just was so gracious. And but just having it was awesome. But I get around that. Andrew's daughter married the guy that's a master distiller at Huber's. He's one of the Huber's, and I look forward to getting them on one day with you, and we can talk about this distilling process, man. That'll be fun to do. So, but enough of that. All right. So, going forward now, basketball, they're about to get going. Let's see, today's the 27th, 4 more days of May, and hello, it's time to get after it. And we'll hear from Coach DeVries in a little bit as they are heading off to Peru in late July. And I'm not planning on going on that trip. This has been an expensive year, people. Indiana basketball went to Puerto Rico last year. Then the college football playoff run was expensive. People say, well, you don't have to pay for tickets. And no, but
plane travel.
The trip was unbelievable. The bill was just scary. And so when people wonder, well, why do we need sponsors? That's why we need sponsors, people, to bring this content. Just getting to Huber's to have this content. It all costs, man. So speaking of which, we all love some sponsors, baby. Help a brother out. So, what goes on now for in your mind for football? They've got these weekends. Coach did also talk about besides these recruiting weekends, the camps, the camps that they have on, and the importance of those, because you're getting kids in that you may or may not be as tuned in to what their value might be, and you can evaluate more so because you've got them right there in a situation where you can manipulate it somewhat.
Yeah. Like I was referencing earlier, you know, that 27 class, you're focusing on the top guys that you think are your top recruits at certain positions that you're going after. Now, the kids that are coming in these one day camps will be a mixture of 27, 28, you know, class years. And the 27 kids that are coming in may not have an offer yet to a, you know, like an Indiana or other schools, you know, they may have some MAC offers on the table and such, but this is a chance for them to get eyes on a kid in her person, work with him to evaluate him from A to Z to make a decision on whether or not they're going to make and extend an offer to him. So vitally important part of the recruiting process, not just for the 27 class, but also the 28 class, because the 28 class kids that are coming in, these are the top guys that may be on their board for that class to make a determination what they're going to do with them. So these one-day camps that they have are so important in the recruiting process. Everybody has them. And the other thing is like you mentioned, the guys that they still have coming in on officials here over the next couple of weeks are also important. But outside of that, when you talk about Indiana's main focus of the football team and what they're doing now, this is a big month for them coming up after they've been through a little bit of May graduations behind them. And now they're into their full summer workout. And this is where you really put yourself in a position to have a great year by getting yourself prepared physically to take on a Big Ten schedule. And it's very important that guys are working hard and getting their lifts and running and stretching in, because that goes all into what the season can be for this group coming up here. And then on top of that, these guys will have their own 7-on-7s. They'll have their own individual drills that they'll run. Now, coaches can have some conversations with them, but not on the field. They can't have any instruction like that, only in the kind of the chalkboard type of deal. But the kids do. They'll run the 7-on-7. They'll run individual drills. And this helps build leadership. This helps build the guys that are going to be looked upon to be the leaders of this group, getting them out, getting them organized. And Coach Sig is fully aware of who those guys will be and those expectations. But it's a time for these kids to really start to gel as a team.
Yeah, and I asked Coach Sig about bringing in a different quarterback for the third straight year, and what it's like to have to get another quarterback integrated into the offense, into the team, and he just simply said, "We do it every year, mm-hmm. or we've done it every year." And I'm one that I don't have an issue with a team having to develop a quarterback from the ground up. I think that Cignetti's record speaks for itself. I mean, if you go back before he was at Indiana, their quarterbacks were conference players of the year, quarterbacks of the year, et cetera. He's done well with that position. He's just going to get better. I don't want to say produce, but he just produced a Heisman Trophy winner. Mm-hmm. He did that in multiple ways. He did that by, first of all, putting the right talent around him. He did that by how he worked with and crafted Fernando from where he was to where what we saw last year. Because just one season before that, he was on his ass 41 times getting sacked and still threw for over 3,000 yards. But so we knew their talent was there. And just like Sig said to, what's the TCU coach's name?
Oh, shoot. You would ask me that. I'm losing.
But when he talked
about it, I'll figure it out.
When he talked about Josh Hoover having his turnovers last year, and which was just all that was a childish, immature shot. Because just last night, also, I was in a private conversation with someone who knows a big time donor to TCU, who I was told walked into the AD or spoke to the AD, period, at some fashion at TCU and said, "I am never giving another nickel to TCU. You just let the best quarterback you've ever had walk away." And bam, that's how upset this particular big time, I'm talking seven-figure donor, was with that. And I get it. The dude had already thrown for 9,000 yards.
Sonny Dykes is the head coach. I just thought of it.
There you go. Thank you. And so not only, and I guarantee you, it's for less money, as I said already. So they did let him walk, but I don't think there's anything they could have done. That's because Josh Hoover wants to be as good as he can be. That wasn't happening at TCU. It wasn't going to happen at TCU. He sees a team that was 3-9 3 years ago and has become what it's become because, and it's not just Kurt, but it starts and ends with Kurt, or doesn't end, but it starts with Kurt Cignetti and his guys, his loyalty of the staff and what he's done to produce this talent. Because it wasn't just Fernando Mendoza that was drafted. 13 guys are on NFL teams right now off of last year's Indiana team. That is what Josh Hoover sees. That's what every player sees that comes to Indiana. The potential maybe for more playing time or than it they would have to fight for at other schools. There's just a myriad of reasons now that Indiana is a place to be. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
No, and I think in Sig's case, and he's developed a name for himself, not just at Indiana, but other institutions that he was at, in terms of developing quarterbacks. He did that at Elon, that had a quarterback that was on basically a losing program, and he turned it around with that young man and won 8 games. And so the word, I guess you could say, is out that Coach Cignetti is known for quarterbacks that thrive under his leadership, and Coach Shanahan and now Tino's back, and what they've done with the group of quarterbacks that they've had through the years and how well those kids have played under Kurt Cignetti's system offensively. And that in itself is a big part of why you see Josh Hoover's and you've seen Mendoza's end up at Indiana. And, you know, even what he did with Curtis Rourke, I mean, here's a kid that was hurt his senior season at OU after, I think, 4 games in or 5 games in, but he comes to Indiana and he basically leads them to the first college football playoff for Indiana. And he did it hurt, but he had a lot of yards throwing. He was a very good quarterback in the system, did well. And you can see how they utilize the talents of those quarterbacks that have come in and fit them into their system. So you take a kid like Josh Hoover, who came from a team that was predominantly 50 times a game, we're going to throw the ball and push the ball down the field. That had led to quite a bit of interceptions when you do that. And you're going to put him in Sig's offense, which is going to have a more ball control mentality, and they'll groom him into what they want him to do because he's already got the talent. He's got a quick release, and I do look for him to be just as successful in this system as Mendoza, as Curtis Work was for the first 2 years. So he has got the magic sauce, I guess you could say, to make quarterbacks flourish in today's football.
Yeah, the only question I have that I think a lot of people have, there's a height difference. Fernando was prototype. QB prototype, 6'5". That's what you dream of having. Josh is, I think, 6'1.5", something like that. And the only reason you even think about that is because the linemen are all freaking 6'5", 6'6", dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's always a concern, I think, if you look at it on the black and white of it. Quarterbacks, it's all about finding windows, and they always seem to find the windows, whether it's between the guys.
We've always got Diego Pavia, coach.
Yeah, that's right. Being able to find the windows and things of that nature. But I think he will be able to do the back shoulder throw. I think he'll be able to throw the ball downfield with accuracy and consistency. As I've watched him throw, he's very smooth in his delivery and such. And so I look for him to be just as comfortable within the offense now that he's gone through it He'll pick it back up. He's got all summer to get, you know, get comfortable in it and continue to do the things that Indy likes to do. And the other thing that makes Indiana's offense successful, and they'll be the first to tell you, they have a run game that complements the pass game. And they're going to have three guys in that backfield that all can tote the rock very well in an offensive line that's done well in opening holes for running backs. And when you couple that with a accurate and consistent thrower at quarterback, you're going to have a team that's going to put points on the board and do it in a fashion that is very consistent as they were again last year.
Brian says his wife does not really understand how scheduling works and if the Raiders would be on every Monday night. No, they will not be. And I would not look for the Raiders to be a winning team this year. They are building. They're building. They're in that building mode. The NFL is not like college, baby. You can't just build a team overnight. Many differences there. So that's the trick of bringing in a quarterback like Fernando. Then they turn around, they trade their starter, but then bring in a guy who they is expected to be the transfer. But he's going to hand off the baton at some point. But damn, that's putting $20 million. I'm like, whoo, nice. I'll take that role.
Yeah, I'd do it for half of it or fourth of it.
Exactly.
But it's been a lot of money.
They've spent a lot of money because Fernando, I mean, what was his contract? 50 million, 50 something million. But
yeah.
But I think that Fernando is going to be successful. He reminds me, I hate to say this, but you know, Tom Brady, I see Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in him. Mm-hmm. I see the cool calm of Tom Brady because that's part of what made him great. He just seemed like he was unflappable. He reminded me of Curtis Rourke. Curtis Rourke, still, man, I think of him and I'm like, wow, this dude. It's like he's in a hurricane all the time, but just no big deal.
Steady Eddie.
But then, and Peyton Manning is just a bookworm, a film junkie. I want this information. I want to know exactly what this defense looks like, how this they've shield these, how they, you know, blah, blah. But I see both of those in him. But I am not an analyst. I am not someone that is going to take their words for a representation of, but I do see both of those types of players in him right now.
No question about it. I think Fernando, he has all the tools at his disposal to be a very good NFL quarterback. It may not happen overnight. I like the fact that they bought Kirk Cousins in because I do think those two are very similar in terms of their personality and the way they go about things. And I think that was Tom Brady's influence about why they brought Kirk Cousins in, because as much as Tom Brady would love to be there to groom the young man, he can't, you know, he's not a part of that aspect of it. So they got a guy that is a veteran, former Big Ten quarterback that's had some success in the league. Very similar to Fernando in terms of the mental part of the game and studying the game. And I think he'll be a big benefit for his development. So it'll be interesting to see how Fernando handles training camp. And then, of course, the preseason to see where he's going to be at. But if he has to learn for a year behind Kirk Cousins, that's not going to hurt him at all. And sometimes you can put a guy in a position way too early and ruin him. As opposed to taking your time with him. I don't know what their schedule is for him in terms of anything, but you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he's the starter either, walking out on the field for their first game of the year.
I would be a little surprised at that. I think we'll see how that goes, but Let's see. So this week in sports, the Knicks are going to the NBA Finals. And do you know how long it's been since they've even been to the finals?
Man.
They're going to party like it's 1999.
Wow. You know been that long.
Since they've won a championship? 1973. Yeah. Wasn't that the Willis? Was Willis Reed, I think, that come hobbling out of the locker room or off the bench. He did the Kirk Gibson, you know, is all busted up. I love that phrase. That reminds me of Hoosiers when the dude gets knocked into the trophy case. Oh, you got to get it. He's all busted up here. 1940s jargon. But it's some other things going on, of course, with the NBA Finals. Last year, we were all jacked up, but Pacers were playing. And that was a huge part of last year's Indianapolis 500, too, because that cross of having the Indy 500 month of May with the Pacers just killing it. It's going to be interesting to see what they do next year now after not getting the that draft pick or a draft pick, period. Mm-hmm. Boy, that just sucks. I mean, that really sucks. That's the stupidest system ever. And they're changing it. But, yeah.
I never understood it. So I haven't put much energy into trying to understand it. But, I'm interested to see the Pacers now. Everybody kind of thought this year would be a little iffy because of how they started the year out with some injuries and such. But I do think this coming year, there's going to be some excitement around what they've got and hopefully, what they can put together again for this season. But yeah, the Knicks, New York's going crazy over it. I mean, that the fact that the Knicks are in it, and those are going to be some great games in the Garden because that place will be rocking when those games come into Madison Square Garden. So those will be fun games to watch just from that standpoint. But yeah, I think I'm interested to see that aspect of things with Pacers and how much they grow from this year to next year. And who knows, maybe they'll get their shot again.
We've got to take a break. Coach Griff with me here on this absolutely beautiful Chamber of Commerce day. It's sunshiny, and I hope you get to go out and enjoy it at some point. But we're going to be back right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this beautiful Thursday. Jim Coyle with you. Coach Griff with me as well. Congratulations to Shooty Dustin. Dustin Shooty, really. His X handle is at Shooty Dustin because I guess Dustin Shooty was taken. But congratulations as he is getting married this weekend. And I told him he'd show up anyway, but we could have had a live on-air bachelor party, Coach.
Yeah, that'd have been interesting. Could have had some skits worked out, but congratulations to Dustin, and he's entering a new phase that will change the rest of his world for the better. I hope
only a great way, and only a great way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I've said, I've been fortunate to be married for 37 years, and my wife had to live as a single mother there for the better part of it when I was in college ball coaching, because my time around the home was very limited per se, and she just chose to stuck it out. I don't know why, but she did. So quite lucky to have that, but I'm happy for Dustin and what he's been able to do. Being a Manchester grad and somebody I've known since then and kind of followed him out afar, but it's a good thing that he's getting that opportunity that he's doing now in sports media, and then of course getting married.
One of the things that slipped my mind, because there's just been so much going on, Brendan Sorsby applied for reinstatement to the NCAA, which we all expected, and wait for it, denied by the NCAA. Of course, I don't know if the lawsuit has been filed yet, but that will be forthcoming, because we've already seen the attorneys laying the groundwork. Well, he this and well that. Well, he didn't bet against his team, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Stop making damn excuses that don't matter.
Yeah.
That's like you running through a stop sign and, I mean, without even hesitating and saying, well, I could see that nobody was coming. Or my favorite is always you get pulled over by an officer and he takes his billy club out and starts beating the crap out of you. And then he'll ask you, do you want me to stop or just slow down? It's a big difference. So,
I'm sure they're trying to get the injunction, you know, and that would open the door for him to play. But here's like you said, the rule is very simple. If you bet on sports, you're done. You can't bet. Neither can anybody within the
organization.
Yeah, right. Nobody can bet. Coaches.
Bring in, what is a sure bet?
Oh, there he is.
Matt Taylor, the voice of the Colts. First of all, how was Indy this year, man?
It was great. It was really good. The rain held off, and we saw a great finish. We were in turn one, so we didn't get the greatest advantage point on the finish line.
Well, nobody really did, and even those that were there, Matt, they didn't know what the hell happened. It was too fast.
Yeah, but it was epic, though, because we were watching the Jumbotron, and yours truly came home with $170 winning the pool this year. So first time in a while. Yeah, feel good about it.
Hey, well, I'm sure you can add that to the pile that Felix Rosenquist has taken home.
Yeah.
$3.4 million for winning. They give you the Corvette. There's another $230,000. And I asked earlier, what do you do with that car, especially when you're the winner of the Indy 500? You're not going to be driving it around Indy with that thing.
No, but if it were me, I would. And you know,
I would too.
I would. I'd be going 170 miles down, I-65 with a clean path. But, no, I mean, I think in
I would hit every roundabout in Carmel and just round and round in all of them.
Yeah. I think, you know, that thing's obviously going to be pristine for the next couple of generations. So, I mean, what a cool thing he's going to be able to do, you know, when he's 60, 70 years old, he can still, you know, bust that thing out and still take a lot of pride in what he accomplished last Sunday.
How much will that damn thing be worth when he's 60 or 7 years old?
Yeah, for sure. Literally.
A $230,000 vehicle today that is the fastest production car in America, I think, at least. These things, they only go up. These guys don't drive these things. They've got there's guys that have 1994 Corvettes that got 280 miles on it or something stupid.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about you, man. You were Mr. IndyCar. You were up there every single day the last 2 weeks.
Oh, baby, I felt it. But I had not covered Indy before the way that you need to cover it if you're going to cover it without just, you know, sprinkling in and like, hey, I'm here. So I was fully immersed, and I absolutely love every moment. I was so disappointed when it was over. I'm like, okay, is it Indy yet?
Yeah, it does. It does feel like the equivalent I have. You bring up such a good point. Like when the race is over, it feels like the end of a wedding reception. Like you plan and you look forward, and then all of a sudden, like it's just done and over. And like now you're just left to think about what we have to wait another 360 days to do this again. Like that's not fair.
And you're so tired, but it doesn't matter.
But that's what makes it so special, that it's literally only once a year, you know?
and I, you know, everybody talks about you can't really understand it unless you experience it.
Yeah.
And that really came home for me more this year than ever, because there's so much to take in. So the opportunities are so incredible for fans. Gasoline Alley, just the access. It's unprecedented, Matt.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think it's the only sport. I mean, I helped the IndyCar Radio Network guys out a couple years ago. And I was just that part that you just mentioned, I was floored by, because I was going up to drivers and introducing myself right there, you know, between that separator of you know, pit road and the road behind pit road, if you will, and just going up to guys asking for interviews while they're in the middle of their craft. Like that to me is like the equivalent of doing an interview with a Colts player in the middle of an OTA. Like, it just doesn't happen. But they embrace it. They want to talk to you. The PR people are so accommodating. They go out of their way to make sure you got what you need. And, you know, I think that's maybe like the one drawback of the NFL, that it is very kind of buttoned up in terms of access. I mean, to get around these guys and to get in the locker room, it's kind of like Fort Knox, you know, like there's like
six, compared to college sports.
Yeah. It's like six different separations of access, but, that's awesome, man. I'm really happy for you that you got to experience that the entire week. Now, were you driving back and forth from Bloomington to Indy every day?
Well, we had someone that was going up, and we were going back and forth every day. 30 hours, I think it totaled.
Man, next year you just need to stay at my house, dude. I'm right off 69. I'm right in the middle zone, so you can just have a cot in my place.
Rented a piece of floor.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. Because I'd already said next year, I don't care. I'm either renting a room from somebody, or I'm getting a camper from somebody and renting that, and boom, staying there, because that was the most taxing part.
Yeah.
It truly was.
Yeah. That's like you were this past couple of weeks, you were like me going to Colts training camp in Westfield, just in the car for a month.
Yeah. And it just stinks, because there's nothing you could do to mitigate it. It's just one of those things that's, boy, it's just so tough.
Well, you know the County Line Road exit on 69, right?
Yeah.
That's me, brother. Let me know.
I'll keep it in mind. The funny thing is, I saw a post that I have a cousin that was living in Plainfield, but they got bought out because a data center was coming in there. And they're moving, but damn, they're living in Spencer now, but they're moving to Brazil, Indiana. And I'm like, wow, you're really getting out there, man. I mean, cause that's worth the Terre Haute.
Yeah. Brazil's right next to Terre Haute. Yeah.
Wow. But one of the things you said something earlier about the IndyCar radio before, and I was already thinking, why are you not on? Last year when Chris was retiring from the IndyCar network and in turn four, I'm like, Matt Taylor right there. I'm like, plop him in. I swear to God, I was thinking that. And I wish I would have reached out to somebody just to say, hey, maybe you guys should consider Matt Taylor for that. I didn't, obviously, but I think you would have been awesome. Maybe it didn't even have to be in turn four, any of the turns. Hell, you're already in turn one, so take turn one.
Yeah. Well, listen, first of all, I appreciate you saying that. But secondly, I think those guys do such a great job, and they are so dialed into their craft. It's not that easy to just kind of helicopter in and go. I fully admit that I am a racing novice. I don't know a tremendous amount of the sport. I don't have a lot of background in the sport, right? I've never tried to drive. I haven't been to a whole lot of races. In fact, I've never been to an IndyCar race outside of the Indy 500. So like I always say this, like I've got a lot of, I have tons. I have an immense amount of civic pride for that race and that racetrack.
But again, I got to be candid. I don't really have a whole lot of time to follow the series outside of those 2 weeks as a fan. And even the last 2 weeks have been kind of crazy and busy for my job now. Like the Colts off-season workout program and OTAs kind of overlaps with the IndyCar series. You know, that kind of starts up around draft time. So obviously I'm pretty busy then. You know, month of May is kind of hit and miss in terms of crazy busyness with the Colts, but still plenty to do. So it's just kind of tough to get away with having a full-time job in the NFL as well. But the times I have dabbled with those guys in the IndyCar series, they have done a great job of uplifting me. And you know, you know me, like if I'm going to do something, I'm going to go full in and do my homework on it. But I spent a lot of time on it just to kind of play catch up and get to a level where I thought I needed to be to do a serviceable job on their broadcast, even if it was a practice day for the Indy 500. But they did a great job of uplifting me and giving me pointers and explaining how things work. So there was a lot of catch up on my part. It's not as easy as you think. And that's why I have so much reverence for those guys, because they know so much about the sport, just like I know so much about the Colts. There really is a lot of background experience that they consistently tap into to do their job so well.
I agree with you. And there is nothing that I think is better to listen to than even a NASCAR race, if it's MRN doing it, but an auto race where you have these guys in each turn, because they're handing it off like a baton and they just don't ever drop the baton. It's awesome how they give you this great energy and then boom, they hand it off to somebody else, more energy. It's just nonstop. Yeah. I think that listening to racing on radio is awesome.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It really is a huge synchronicity symphony. And to your point, those guys do such a great job of using their voice as an instrument. And, you know, they've been working together for a long time, so they know their inflections and they know kind of their speaking patterns and their stopping points. But even in saying that, like they do a great job of using their voice as an instrument to set up the next guy to take on that baton, like you mentioned, and have there be no drop off. And so, I mean, it's just like a lap of voices all the way around that 2.5 mile oval. And it really is just complete harmony when they're all in sync.
Did you get any IMS merchandise this year?
You know what? I didn't this year. You know what? I take that back. I did buy a hat when I was out there on Fast Friday. I took the kids out there. They were off school. They had a weird day off school on Friday before the Indy 500. So I took them out there on Fast Friday and got them some stuff. And while I was out there, I got a hat. But yeah, I usually try to pick up a, you know, sweatshirt or a t-shirt every year for sure.
When I first got there, this is like early in, 2 weeks before the race, I was walking around, you're looking to see the stuff they had. First thing I see jumps out is this black t-shirt with Signetti in a car, I saw that.
You know? I did see that. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh God, I got to grab that for prosperity's purposes. So I grab it, but then we end up having an availability with him like 2 nights later. So I'm like, all right, I'm taking this shirt to see, ask him. T-shirt, which I did during the presser, and it was funny moment. And then I just drop it and keep on with what we're doing. And then after it was over, I said, "What, coach? Do you want it?" He's like, "Yeah, sure." I'm like, "Damn, there went $50."
Oh, so he didn't even kidding. He didn't even try to give you a courtesy reach for the payback.
It's all good. No, it was just funny, man. I just thought it was funny stuff. Before I get into Daniel Jones, Hunter Daly. Oh, yeah, that time I spent there, just like you, it was a crash course for me as well. I mean, I like to think that I have knowledge about Indy and a lot of everything else that I cover, but having knowledge and knowing are two different things. Yeah. And I learned what I did know. That's what I learned. And there is a lot. So it was a crash course. But yeah, you mentioned the PR people are amazing.
Yeah.
The media people at IMS are amazing.
Yes, they are. Dave
starts with him and it goes down from there. But and Dave, a former TV anchor there in Indianapolis. He was at RTV, I think.
Yeah, Channel 6.
But that's been a while since he's been gone there.
Yeah, it feels like almost like a decade that he's been gone.
Oh, but at least that or longer, probably. Yeah. Here's a factoid for you. Me and Dave interned together at the CBS station in Louisville.
Is that right?
That's how I know him. And then there's another guy, a friend of ours, that is a anchor for the ABC station in Los Angeles and has been for quite a while. All three of us were interns at the same time. And it felt like that 83 quarterback draft class
with Marino and Elway. Oh God.
But who was, there was one guy, was Ryan Leaf in that class?
No, Ryan Leaf was 97 with Manning.
Okay. There was somebody in that class that was like a bust. I can't remember who it was, but well, that's me.
No, so, no. That was what it was Jim Kelly and Elway and Marino, right?
Yeah, it was just nuts. And now we look at this year, you don't quite have that. But I saw the Daniel Jones throwing to receivers.
Yes, Daniel Jones yesterday. So the Colts had their first open to the media practice for their OTA session. The OTAs have begun, and I think there's a little bit of a misnomer just to clarify some things. You know, I think when the offseason program starts, a lot of people just say, well, OTAs have begun. Well, actually, OTAs is the last phase of the offseason workout program. So now we're finally into those, and those will take on the next 3 weeks before the offseason program concludes. So each team is allowed 9 OTAs, including a 3-day minicamp, which is coming up for the Colts June 9th through the 11th. But OTAs for the Colts started this week. Their first open practice to the media was yesterday, and it was really, really very, very positive day. I mean, starting with Daniel Jones, he looks so far ahead of schedule. He's 5.5 months removed from a torn Achilles, and for my money, he's already doing way more than someone at that stage of his rehab should be doing, being able to kind of cut and move and drop back and plant. Now, the Colts are going to take it slow with him on purpose, right? Because they don't have a regular season game for another 4.5 months, if you will. So they're doing a nice job of pushing him, but also knowing that there's no reason to go, you know, overboard with it. So he didn't do 7-on-7 yesterday. He didn't do 11-on-11. But, you know, Shane Steichen was pretty candid yesterday, saying he's not surprised by Jones's rehab. And he wouldn't rule out the possibility of Jones doing some more 7-on-7 later on in OTAs, perhaps next week or the week after. But I think it's Daniel Jones' intention and the Colts' intention that he's going to be pretty much full go, 100% with no limitations, when training camp starts in late July, which to me, as a normal guy that's not nearly as freakish athletic as Jason Tatum or Tyrese Halliburton or Daniel Jones, it's just mind-blowing to me that these guys are coming back, you know, 9 months, 10 months removed from, you know, a devastating injury in their legs.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. And Coach, quick word, we've got 30 seconds left.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how has Riley Leonard's progression looked thus far?
Yeah, Riley looks really good. And the Colts were really, really impressed with him all of last year as he continued to progress and be able to handle more and more things that were put on his plate. I mean, he started week 18 against the Houston Texans, who played their starting defense for the first 2.5 quarters of that game. That was a week 18 regular season finale game for them. But that's the best defense in the NFL last year. And Riley Leonard did not look like a fish out of water. And he's only gotten better this entire offseason and during the offseason workout program. The biggest thing for Riley that he's discussed in the last couple of months is he wants to understand, or he wants to get on the same level at the line of scrimmage in pre-snap is Daniel Jones, to understand everything that he's looking at in terms of why they're calling plays, why they're in this formation, why they check to these things when the defense shows them this, that, or the other. He really wants to understand the why and the all the intricacies of the playbook on offense, and he's doing a really good job of that.
Matt Taylor from the Indianapolis Colts. Love you, brother. Appreciate you.
All right, man. I'll see you next May. I got you set up in the sunroom, at least. It's got your name on it.
I see dinners for you and your wife at St. Elmo's, and I will babysit.
That a boy. Well, hey, that's a great deal for me. I'm coming out the better end of that deal. I can guarantee it.
I'm in. That's a promise. Matt Taylor, appreciate you, sir, joining us here, Coach. Man, boy, that flew today, and appreciate you as well.
Yeah, I appreciate being on and staying around for a little bit longer today and be on tonight at 7:30 and talking about the Hoosiers going from the hunter to the hunted.
There you go. Don't miss it. The Hoosier tailgate on thehoosier.com. We've got more tomorrow. Appreciate each and every one of you. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.